So we were going to do this show on Wednesday, but we decided to push it back a little bit because the first half of the week was an absolute bore, in my opinion. And the whole week in general was not as packed with news and Google things as I think both of us kind of expected that a little bit.
We were conditioned last year. There was just daily, there were announcements last year leading up to I.O. about the small things that they may end up making the keynote. But this year, it was not that.
There were some things. Wear OS Tiles comes to mind.
Which is interesting.
Yes, it is. Although, I don't know. It's a weird announcement to me because it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, being friends with someone, you've been friends with them in the past and you just haven't talked in 6 months, and then you just text them and say, hey, want to hang out? And that's kind of like what happened with Wear OS this week. It's like we don't Wear OS is irrelevant. You haven't talked about it in months or years, and we have Google I.O. coming up right around the corner, and Google announced a very minor feature that it's not going to change really anything about Wear OS and the current state of Wear OS. And so it seems, I don't know, just a little bit odd to me. It seems a little tone deaf.
I do have some color to add about it. I think, so tiles, basically, they're widgets that you can quickly access from the main screen. On the right side of the watch face used to be Google Fit, and now you can reorganize that to add more widgets, more tiles. I think for Google, this is them saying that Wear OS apps aren't a thing, so just take these tiny complications of data that hopefully more developers will be willing to adopt and create tiles for.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing as complications on the Apple Watch.
Yeah, but it needs a full screen, which is something.
Yeah. One of the interesting things I just thought about was on the Apple Watch. Apple has the advantage of only having a certain number of screen sizes and types, and so they can maximize, for instance, that new watch face that just shipped with Series 4, they were able to maximize, I guess, taking advantage of that space, whereas Google doesn't. I mean, that one watch face has, what, like 12 complications or something on it?
Yeah, where it's even like, though it's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But, you know,
yeah,
Apple has the advantage that they can design that, and Google can't really do that.
Yeah, unless they do a Pixel Watch.
Right.
Which, cough.
Speaking of Pixel Watch, things that we don't expect to see at Google I.O. 2019, I guess we can start with that list before we get into things that we do expect, because that's pretty much what the show is going to be today. We're going to talk about everything that we're expecting and hoping to see and predicting, I guess, in some cases, things that Google will be talking about on stage next week on May 7th. But yeah, like I said, let's start with things we can probably rule out. I think Pixel Watch is a pretty safe bet. I think that if that was anywhere close to a consumer launch, I think that we would already have seen it, or at least be aware of it in some way besides just code names, because we do have a couple code names which suggest that it's real and it might be happening later this year. But I don't think that there's much evidence to suggest that it's happening this week. Yeah, that's first thing. Pixel 4, we can say that's pretty safely not going to happen this week. Or next week, because it's just not ready. And again, we would probably have seen lots of leaks of it. And we also do know one thing that is coming next week, which is Pixel 3a. We're pretty confident on that at this point. Probably not going to see any new laptop or tablet hardware. Seems pretty unlikely. We're not going to see Android R.
No.
But yeah, so that, I mean, there's plenty of things that are definitely on the list of not happening. Unfortunately, Pixel Watch is one of those things.
Yeah, like you said, this, as you've seen with the Pixel 3a, nothing is sacred, everything is leaked from the Google store to the Pixel 3a actually showing up in retailers' locations already. So very unlikely that Google kept this so secretive.
Although I will say, I always find myself surprised at Google I/O every year. So if there's something about hardware, I mean, just, I guess, I mean, you just mentioned, you know, the certifications that it has to go through is just one of many, many outlets that hardware has to go through that can potentially cause leaks. You know, retail outlets, that's a whole other thing. You know, Best Buy, it's another one you just mentioned. It's like, there's so many avenues to which hardware can leak, but I'm always surprised every year with Google I/O, just the number of things that Google manages to keep hush hush. Because the software stuff is a lot easier to keep confined in smaller teams with less external, I guess, risk and exposure. I'm trying to remember what the big one was last year that, the AR and Google Maps, for example. There was no sign of that, and that was like one of the big, you know, stars of the show. And then Google Duplex, that was another one that was like, that was totally out of left field. Apparently even most people at Google didn't even know about that announcement until the day of the announcement. So there's lots of things that Google manages to keep under wraps. But before we get to that, I guess we can start off with the things we are most confident are that are being announced next week, which are the hardware things. Pixel 3a is the first of the two. There's two things primarily, Pixel 3a and Nest Hub Max. Pixel 3a, we pretty much know everything about it. We've been talking about it on this show for a month or two now. I think it was late March, around the time of the Stadia launch, that I had that scoop, which basically detailed all the specs. There's just not much about it that we didn't know. Although I guess there are a few little things that have come out in the last week or so that are news. I think pricing is probably the biggest of those.
So the estimated, what is it, $399, $499?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's...
$399 for the 3A and $479 for the 3A XL, which is, I think, appropriate pricing, given the two different sizes, 5.6 and 6 inches.
Yeah, it's interesting. Usually we see... When there's a difference, like an XL version of a phone, it's usually, I think, tends to be more than a $79 premium. The difference between the standard Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL, for example, is it $100? Yeah.
$100.
So the $79 premium for the larger version is interesting and unusual, at least for the premium phone market, which obviously these aren't. What do you think about that price? Do you think that $399 is, first of all, is it higher or lower than you expected it to be? And secondly,
is actually lower than I expected it to be.
Really?
Given that I know this was always targeted as a mid-range phone, but given Google's pricing history, with the Pixel, I thought they were going to somehow make it slightly a bit more expensive. But I guess in the context of what we learned about the premium smartphone market during Google's Alphabet's earnings calls on Monday, there are pressures leading to less sales of the Pixel 3 compared to the Pixel 2 last year.
That was interesting to hear. Because I didn't expect that. Because to me, it never seemed like the Pixel 2 did extraordinarily well.
Yes, that exactly. The Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL are far and away so much better designed than last year's phones. And to hear that they are not selling as well is shocking.
Yeah, it's also interesting in the context. So there's definitely some, I guess, conflicting information happening. To me, it seems like conflicting information about what's happening with Pixel sales. I guess particularly what comes to mind is this report / study that came out of, well, research that came out of, what was it? I'm trying to pull it up right now. One second. this came out of Counterpoint Research, which they said that as of the end of 2018, based on their data, that Google has overtaken LG as the number three in sales for premium smartphones in the United States. Which I don't know that to me that kind of conflicts with what Google said on the earnings call, which was that the Pixel 3 is doing worse than the Pixel 2. So to me, when I first read this from Counterpoint, it signaled to me that the Pixel 3 was doing better than I and many people expected. I thought it meant, oh wow, the Pixel 3 has really kind of taken off this year. And then to hear from Google themselves, you know, kind of, you know, saying the antithesis of that, which is Pixel 3 is doing even worse than the Pixel 2 did. It seems hard. I mean, I guess, is that a testament to how badly LG is doing?
I think that's a takeaway from that. I don't think clearing LG is a high bar at this point. Google, the Pixel camera is something, it has struck a resonance with people. They know what it's like good for. And there are ads on it, even if it's just for Verizon, the largest carrier in the US. I think they have such a more sizable presence in LG, so.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And
in that regards.
I guess with the pricing having been leaked now for the Pixel 3A and 3A XL, that was one of the things that was up in the air. I mean, if Google launched these two phones at $599, which is the current that's the current sale price of the standard Pixel 3, for those that don't know. If they launched it at $599, this would be a different story. Like the story that Google's telling or pitching with this phone launch would be different if they had launched it as like a kind of not as premium as still kind of between mid-range and premium, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas this pricing would suggest that they're truly trying to push volume. It's literally 50% of the Pixel 3 price.
Yeah, I definitely, with these phones, I did think that Google was trying to go, I didn't think that Google was actually going to call the Pixel 3 a mid-range device. I thought they were going to go for that pseudo, it's premium enough maybe, or something like that. I thought they were going to advertise this phone, that they weren't necessarily going to knock, that it doesn't have a premium body or glass-covered rears and whatnot. I thought they were going to, like, given what we've known about past Pixel, the past three generations, I thought they were going to go for a slightly higher tier.
Yeah.
But again, in the context of this earnings call, it shows that Google needs this to be a winner to help the phone business.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was talking about last week, was that it seemed to me like they were positioning this the same way that Apple has positioned the iPhone XR, or Samsung has done the Galaxy S10e, which is kind of like a slightly, it's this new category of sub-premium, or maybe the true new category is the ultra-premium, and the S10e and the XR are the premium. Whatever the case may be, it seemed to me that the Pixel 3a and 3a XL were going to be in the same category. And I think that with these prices, if this is true, if these are the real prices, that's not the angle that Google is going for.
Yeah. Is anybody else in the US market competing for this true mid-range pricing point that's going to be backed by what's probably a gigantic advertising spend? I think Google has something unique here that they're trying.
I think that the best, I guess, comparison to this would be the iPhone 7, which is $449 right now, which, you know, it's not, I guess, not perfectly parallel, because it is dated in many, many ways that the Pixel 3a is not dated in comparison to the Pixel 3. For example, camera prowess. The Pixel 3a, seen based on reports and rumors, seems to be up to par with the Pixel 3 in camera performance, whereas the iPhone 7 is very far away from the iPhone XR even. And so it's not a perfect parallel, but I think people tend to forget that the way Apple does mid-range is by just selling the 2 or 3 year old devices.
Yeah.
Which are not, I mean, I've used an iPhone 7 on iOS 12, and I think for a lot of people it's a half decent value at fine. $449, honestly. So
my SE one's great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So yeah, it's not, I don't think it's super unique, but I guess it is unique in the sense that Apple's not launching
in the Android space.
Apple's not launching an iPhone 10RA, you know, where they're just they're doing a half priced phone with, you know, they're not doing that. Samsung's not doing this. I don't really think
in the US. Maybe I should add a caveat. In the US, this is very much an international approach. It's, I forgot what Samsung's competing phone is called in overseas, but they do have that true mid-range.
Right.
And I guess what I find interesting is Google bringing that strategy that other OEMs have, I would say, perfected overseas to the US market and seeing what the end result is.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of reminds me of, like you mentioned overseas, is it kind of reminds me of the OnePlus strategy a little bit.
The original OnePlus.
Yeah, the original, which is not, it's not the case anymore, because it seems like the OnePlus 7 Pro is seemingly going to go straight up head to head with, you know, the top of the line flagships. But yeah, that's what it reminds me of. And it's, you're right, it is interesting. I think it's unique. I mean, if we consider the three big players, Apple, Samsung, and Google, Google is the only one that's going to be doing this strategy of, they're taking, honestly, and this is one of the things that's really confusing to me is that, I guess, and we've talked about this on the show before, which, you know, is that the Google Pixel 3 had and would have a hard time justifying itself, even competing at all with Samsung's flagships and Apple's flagships, except for the camera. The camera was the differentiator. The camera was, you're not getting as good hardware quality, maybe even getting not as great performance compared to the, at least this year, compared to the flagship Samsung phone and the flagship Apple, the flagship iPhone. But at least you're getting the best camera, or at least, I don't know. Is it still the best camera? Is it going to be the best camera next year? I mean, that's kind of even become more blurry too. It's like it has held the best camera crown for 2.5 years, 3 years. And it seems like that crown is slipping a little bit because Apple and Samsung are catching up so much.
I think in how the Pixel camera is slipping is in terms of, they're not slipping in terms of the actual the quality of the pictures you're taking. I think it's slipping in the surrounding experience involved with actually taking the picture. But I think, as we saw with Samsung year, it's the same sensor, and they apparently added a mediocre the third lens is apparently of mediocre quality. And I guess with Apple, the discussion is what kind of processing they're doing, the HDR processing versus Google's, which Google has been doing for longer. So I think they still have that stake in terms of pure quality when you have, I don't know, put on a tripod.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And I'm not a super big camera guy, so I can't really get into the weeds on this.
Likewise.
But I would say based on, you know, just on the camera comparisons, which, may I note, Damien's been doing a lot of them over on our YouTube channel between Pixel and the rest of the flagships. I think the Pixel definitely holds up still, for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, oh man, I tweeted about this week. One of the most ironic things about the Pixel 3 is that, you know, Google really fixed a long-standing problem in Android, which was camera app performance. The first Pixel fixed that problem once and for all, it seemed like. You know, before that, Nexus phones had terrible camera app performance. Samsung phones, for the most part, had terrible camera app performance. And the Pixel phone came in and said, we're going to do the camera right, and we're going to do the camera app right. And it was whatever, hardware accelerated, or I don't know. I don't remember the details of it, but it was great. And just as a user, I was like, you know, I felt when I used the first Pixel that it was the only phone that stood up to the iPhone in terms of camera app performance. And it's just so ironic and unfortunate that now with the Pixel 3, the biggest problem that people are having is camera app performance. And the way Google's responded to it is basically to say, at least from what I've seen on Twitter, Google support is basically to say, hey, have you tried booting into safe mode to see if it's one of your apps causing the problem? To which I think that's just, I think it's ridiculous if other apps are causing the built-in apps for core functions to stumble and to fail, then that's a problem on Google's part. In my opinion, not a problem on the third-party apps that you're installing. This is maybe a philosophical thing that, I don't know, maybe Android fanboys don't love, but I think that if that's happening, then that means the apps are not contained well enough and not controlled well enough by the software, and it's definitely a problem. And so, this is all to say that it's just unfortunate that Google has kind of fallen behind, it seems, in various ways. That where it was the uncontested leader
in quality and experience.
Yeah, exactly. It is now kind of. I don't know if they're slipping as much as the other guys are catching up. And it'll be interesting to see what Google does this year. Besides, I mean, the Pixel 3A pitch is this is the Pixel 3 experience in half the price when it comes to the camera. It'll be interesting to see what the Pixel 4 pitch is. I'm guessing that they're going to do one of these super zoom lens things that we've seen pop up in the other manufacturers.
Periscope, the ever so lovely called Periscope.
Also, has the Google Camera app gotten bloated since the original Pixel? And do you think that has an effect on performance?
I don't. My performance is fine.
I've personally had fine experience with Pixel 3 too, but I can't deny the fact that there are dozens and dozens of people that I've seen anecdotally reporting issues.
Yeah.
So
the scale.
What is the problem here?
Only Google truly knows what's happening, and unless we get somebody from them and somebody who has all that data coming in, those returns, those performance, those crash reports, we've got nothing to fully make a comparison on. But as you were saying, those people that are affected by this, they're definitely affected by it.
Yeah. I haven't really had many of the problems that people are talking about with Pixel 3 in general. Anyways, how do you think this, you know, is going to impact the Pixel 3A? Do you think that we'll see the Pixel 3A, given that it has worse specs, be kind of a mess, or do you think that?
So actually the thing there is, you buy a premium phone because you want the quality, you want premium materials, you would assume a quality experience. What happens when you cut the phone, the pricing in half? How does that carry over?
Right.
So how much? Yeah, I guess the internal question is, how much time did Google have to optimize the Pixel 3A? How much of a development cycle did they have? When they could work out any possible hardware issues and optimize the software, which is what we praised the original Pixel for. So I guess, in terms of how...
I think Google would be shooting themselves in the foot very badly if they launch this next week and it is a poor performer. I think the only way the Pixel 3A story ends up happy and good for Google is if the story is this is, for all intents and purposes, the same experience as the premium Pixel 3 minus some luxuries.
Yeah.
And that's the only way it ends well. If the reviews come out next week and the story is Pixel 3A
is
slow and laggy and has all of the problems we've seen with Pixel 3 but worse, then this is not going to end well for Google, I don't think. Because what Google needs is I don't know. They this need something that stands out as a unique value, and this will not stand out as a unique value in the market if it's just a worse version of the Pixel 3. I don't think.
Curious about people's tolerances to a mediocre experience. Like, okay, so being able to launch the camera quickly, that is, I think everybody can see the value in that, and it's annoying when it's slow to launch and you miss a picture. But as what if, as long as people are getting the great photo when they night sight takes a second or two, if once they get like that awesome captured photo, is that enough for most people? I'm just trying to see what the expectation for $400
phone depends. Is the Pixel 3a an any old Android phone, or is the Pixel 3a going to be a Google phone?
And but
is
do that people know the difference?
And well, this is, I guess, I think yes. I think that is what Google has spent the last 3 years trying to market, that the Google phone is different than any old Android phone, because sure. there is a pop culture problem. There is a general American culture understanding of phones that is, in my opinion, not totally accurate, but it is what it is. And that is the negative connotation of Android phones being laggy and buggy and slow and having apps that crash and yada, yada, yada. And green bubbles are not as premium as the blue bubbles. And, you know, you could go on and on about, I guess the pop culture, I guess, understanding of what an Android phone is. Mm-hmm. And I think Google has done well the last 3 years to position the Pixel phone as not an Android phone, but as a Google phone, and try to tell a different story and try to create a different brand image for itself that's separated from the Android sure. brand. I think there's a reason that they don't talk about Android with the Pixel phones. And I guess what seems to be happening, maybe not as much as it seems, because maybe not as much as we think, because we're the ones that are covering it. And I think David at Android Police has talked about this too, but we're so heads down in Pixels, and we all own Pixels, and we all know people who own Pixels. And so we're definitely more exposed to the problems, and more, we're picking it apart more than 99% of people are. And so I think there's a little bit of, I guess, I don't know, just illusion that we're creating for ourselves because we're super in the weeds on them that may not be reflective of how the popular culture views yeah. them. But to me, it seems like, at least in our little tech bubble, and I feel like what happens in the tech bubble is then what kind of like, I don't know, irradiates into the culture. And what we're seeing happen in our little bubble is the Pixel 3 start to be, and the Pixel in general start to be regarded as, oh, haha, you wanted that Google experience, which was supposedly better and smoother and, you know, more polished or whatever than the standard Android experience. And yet people are still having problems with the Pixel 3, abundantly. Mm. And so, I don't know. I'm a little bit worried because it seemed like they had such a great start in setting themselves apart from the rest of the Android crowd. And
yeah,
I don't know. Anyways, we need to move on because this was supposed to be a Google I/O prediction show and we've barely gotten beyond Pixel 3a. So yes, Pixel 3a coming likely, I mean, almost certainly next week, May 7th. We pretty much have all the details over at 9to5google.com. And that's another thing. Carriers. We're expecting that they will launch on Verizon, Sprint.
Yes.
Or that. Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. This was a new scoop that came out just 30 minutes ago from Android Police. Apparently it's coming to Sprint too. So it seems to be, you know, Google's opening up the floodgates.
Okay, the pricing is obviously important, but with all the Pixel 3 coming to Verizon, I mean, sorry, the Pixel 3 coming to Sprint and T-Mobile, do you think that's a bigger deal than the Pixel 3a? Because I can see a future where the bigger deal next week is the Pixel coming to other carriers, and therefore people in the US anyways starting to buy the Pixel.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I think Google had to make the strategic decision at some point to say, we're going to get off of this bandwagon of, I kind of see Verizon as like, you know, the father who's carrying the child through the woods, you know, on his back. Like, that's kind of the image that comes to my mind, is that Google is somewhat dependent on Verizon for
the father is money, by the way. That's the metaphor. The father is money and ad time.
Sure. Yes.
And billboards.
Yes. Lots of billboards and product placement in the stores, in the physical stores. There's now, if you've been to a Verizon store recently, there's three sections. There's Apple, Samsung, and Google. There's not Apple and there's not like the iPhone section, and the Android section. It's clearly a 3-tent pole store layout. And I think that's a big deal too. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think that Google's hope was that, you know, Verizon could carry them, help carry them to a place where they could go into the other carriers and make a significant mark. Do I think that Google is now going to waltz into the Sprint store and suddenly be one of three major tent poles in terms of what Sprint is featuring in their stores? That seems...
Yeah.
Unlikely.
Sprint/T-Mobile. I don't know.
Unfortunately.
If that ever happens, which it might not happen at this rate.
But anyways, we'll see next week what happens with this. I do think that the carriers are a big deal. And the carriers happening and the Pixel 3a happening at the same time is going to be hard. That's two major variables it's a paradigm shift that's happening with the Pixel business this month.
Yes.
So
that said, it would be very interesting to see overseas where it's available on many carriers and the different markets entirely,
for sure.
Like Europe. But yeah, that's the Pixel 3a.
Nest Hub Max is also coming next week, we think.
We know everything but the design.
Yeah, we've seen everything about it, except for what it actually looks like, the retail box. We assume it'll just be a scaled-up version of the Google Home Hub.
Do we?
Well, I do. I don't know. What other form factor do you think it would take? Would you think that it'll look like one of the smart displays that we've seen? Which of the smart displays do you think it would look most like? The Lenovo one?
No.
JBL one?
They can't take the Lenovo ID. And the JBL one that looks like a gigantic boom CD box is hideous. No offense. Maybe it looks like a Home Hub with a display in the middle and thinner. A Home Max with a display and thinner. But I don't know. I hope they do something more interesting than the Home Hub. I want something nicer looking in my house, especially if it's bigger.
This whole like Google Nest crossover thing is going to be interesting, because the Home Hub definitely it looks so Google Home. You know, the Home Hub is the fabric on the back, and it just has the elegant like whatever. Just Swedish design language kind of, you know, Swedish. The simplistic, you know, fabric or whatever, and. Anyways, the Nest Hub Max, to me, if it's going to be called the Nest Hub Max, is it going to look more like a Nest product, which I think notably don't exactly look totally very similar to Google?
Nest, how would you describe Nest? Hard plastics?
Yeah,
where the cheapest stuff, especially the thermostat E, is defined by plastics. So, yeah, also, how are you going to call the sensor? Like, you need a pretty high-res sensor in there if you're going to do security stuff. Hmm. And you have to make accommodations for, like, sensing, calling ultrasonic, whatever.
Yeah, for that to be used as a security camera,
the sensor needs
to be bigger.
Yeah.
It's going to take up space.
Especially the low-light stuff. The Nest Cam IQ is a pretty chunky thing. Big iOS and has flash surrounding it, right?
Well, whatever it looks like, it will have very similar internals to the Google Home Hub. We know that. So yeah, that's that. We just know it's going to be a scaled up, or it'll be a bigger version of the Home Hub internally, and it'll have a camera on the front for Duo calls and perhaps Nest security features. We also know that we have evidence that it seems like Google might be unbundling parts of the Nest Secure security system.
Yeah.
And allowing the Nest Hub Max to be used in place of the Nest Guard Hub, which would make total sense.
And they would have to announce that next week if they're going to make a major push into security. And yeah. We haven't heard, none of the other Nest stuff has leaked. So that's surprising if they're going to make this big push.
Yeah, and I guess we also don't know. And maybe there might be more hardware coming next week that we don't know about. The smaller things Google manages to keep under wraps a little bit better than the more important things, I think. So maybe we'll see a new Chromecast or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah.
On the software front, we need to move on because we're like 45 minutes in already. On the software front, expect a lot of things that are pretty much annual events at this point. Android Q will almost certainly be making an appearance. Well, not almost certainly. It will 100% certainly be making an appearance at Google I/O 2019. We know a lot about it already because Google launched the first beta back in, was it February or March? It was March. Early March, they launched the first beta. Just lots and lots of stuff. I feel like this release of Android for me, and compared to previous years, it's like it's harder to pin down any tentpole features. At least, I mean, that's for me. I mean, dark mode is one of them. The bubbles, I guess. But I feel like the first two betas, we don't really get a chance to nail down. Okay, these are going to be the things that Google's highlighting the most.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's pretty much the big thing we'll see next week is what on a user-facing perspective, what is Google going to be putting at the forefront as these are the user-facing additions to this operating system. Mm-hmm. I think dark mode will easily be one of those. It seems like Google's revamping the navigation system for the second year in a row. It seems like they're going to be basically copying the iPhone and just getting rid of the navigation bar. Seems like a natural evolution of last year's changes. It seems like these bubbles thing is happening.
I don't know if there's a developer demand for yet, so I'm very interested in the messaging around that.
Indeed. There's like, I don't know, two dozen little more minor changes and features that I don't know. Is there any other main big changes that are happening this year that
we know
about?
Not yet. We can definitely speculate.
Yeah.
With Assistant, which is the next section.
Oh, indeed. Yes. Assistant is also another thing that is very much the center of focus, has been the last few years at Google I/O. Assistant basically every year tends to just permeate further and further into all of Google's products.
It has to. It's the company's future.
Indeed. It is, apparently. And we have a few little tidbits of information about what we'll see with Assistant, one of which is some kind of Assistant integration coming to Chrome for Android, which Kyle managed to dig up what seems to be a demo for I/O.
Yes.
So we'll see. We'll probably see that demo happening, and Kyle will get a good laugh out of that. There's a revamp for Google Lens coming.
Yes, this is what I'm actually kind of more excited for in terms of augmented reality and that future. So Dylan in the Google app was able to enable this a new look for Google Lens that basically adds filters or modes that users can manually navigate to activate translation or to specifically look for shopping items in addition to like a main view that just searches for things. So it might seem like added complexity by adding filters versus like just one screen that you point your phone at, but at the same time it allows Google to be much more specific about the kinds of results it delivers. So I think Lens is cool. You might use it once in a while to grab some text to do OCR, but I don't think it's a killer feature yet. And I think in line with assistant, Google wants to push Lens as hard as possible to do this, to get a head start in this augmented reality future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lens is always it's one of those products, I think, that, I mean, well, they it goes back to... It goes back to Google Goggles. This has always been one of those things that is a showcase for machine learning and AR now, that is kind of one of those things that I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's definitely a showcase, and it's a that's really cool product. I can count on one finger the number of times I've used Google Lens in the last year. So it's very significant in that it pushes forward these technologies, and it is an example of these technologies being pushed forward. But it's also, I think, has very limited real world use case, at least not yet.
Especially in a phone form factor, it's the big caveat right now. But yeah, I definitely agree. Google hasn't. Lens in the future should be treated as a utility, as just something that you always have there with you to access, to grab text, to, instead of having to manually search via text or via voice, that you can just point your phone at it. But it's not there yet. It's definitely not there yet.
And I'm not going to do this on this show. I will again in the future.
Do it.
Bringing up the idea once again of a constantly running 24/7 Google Lens that is always looking at everything around you.
Where is that located physically on your body? I wonder.
We have two of them.
Yeah.
That's the future of Google Lens that I imagine, is that we'll have our phones, multiple cameras, always looking and analyzing everything around us and actually giving us actionable things based on that.
Yeah.
The kind of dystopian, because, you know, there's definitely the spying implications there, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, when it's useful. When who did I meet last week becomes an actual command that works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hot word. Who is that guy I ran into on the street? And it's like, it searches through all of the, you know, video of Google, or the Google Lens video, and makes a face match to someone on Twitter. And it's like, gives you the name. And
I guess for the both of us, like, glasses, augmented reality is always the wild card for us. But I don't think it's this year. We have definitely. No,
definitely not. It's probably not for the next few years.
I don't know. There's that rumor about Apple doing augmented reality sooner or later. And once one company taps their shoes, toes in, whatever the expression is, it'll start a gold rush. Everybody will be lining up to get out their competing platforms. So it's really just
It's not really about companies putting it out, or a company like Apple even putting it out. It's a matter of company like Apple figuring out how it actually resonates with people, and how people can actually use it, and how it actually is a valuable technology in people's lives. And I don't think Google Glass really made that argument very well.
Google Glass, because of its imposing nature, didn't have the benefit of the Apple Watch, where Apple was able to experiment in public and refine in public, and a year or 2 years later, able to deliver a better product. So, that's wild card, perennial wild card, IO.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing that's really interesting is that earlier this year, Kyle dug up evidence that Google is working on a touchless version of Android, which would kind of go up against the operating system that's been running on some feature phones called KaiOS.
Yeah. Premium feature phones are obviously more of an international thing. So I don't think it deserves much of a US audience, but it is interesting for Google to be creating a whole new spin-off of Android, especially like this rate in how far along we are with technology. Feature phones aren't, most people might not think of them as exciting or relatively new, but there is still a market there to create even cheaper phones to bridge the gap from dumb phones to smartphones. So IO would be the ideal stage for that, with an international audience. developer.
Yeah, but I guess the question is there a market for Google to really invest in this operating system and seek out third-party development developers
and
really like build out, build this, I guess, alternative version of Android the same way they've tried to build out Android Auto and Android Wear and Android TV and the list goes on.
It's basically Android Wear, Wear OS on a small phone, isn't it?
The question is that worth it? And I don't know. It seems like the evidence suggests that this is actually going to be something that they... I mean, if they already have it running and they're already actively building their own applications for it, then I don't know. It seems like Google wants this on phones, on real phones.
Yeah, but you brought the really interesting point about whether there is third-party developer interest. The idea of building it on Android is that you have the Android developers and maybe they could make rudimentary apps. At the same time, stuff like KaiOS excels because it's the web. And it's the platform that everybody already has, and you can just make super light web apps and whatnot. But the idea of committing, getting developers to make these small Android apps is really something.
Yeah, I mean, the very basic economic question of is there and are there going to be enough of these phones even sold?
Yeah.
For it to be worth it for Spotify or Uber, for example, to build apps for this alternative version of Android. And my guess would be no. But that doesn't mean Google won't try. They've tried dumber things. Especially when they see an emerging market and they just would rather disrupt it before it even gets started. Yeah, and on that note, Chrome. Chrome. There was this all stemmed from Google building Chrome for what we can now say as 100% fact is an alternative version of Android for touchless devices, feature phones. It's currently based on Oreo, based on the screenshots that we've seen. So, But anyways, on another Chrome things, there's also I guess Chrome is. I mean, it's Google's focus for. Tablets and laptops as of late. And as mentioned, we think Google is probably going to demo Assistant integration with Chrome for Android in some way. There's also evidence that Google will bring Android Q to Chrome OS, which we've surfaced, which would be the first time that Google's done that 2 years in a row.
Yeah, there was a two-year gap between P and Nougat N, so... I would personally be surprised if they're ready to make the jump, but at the same time, quicker development cycles would definitely help the experience of Chrome OS, especially on tablets. Pixel Slate.
Indeed. And there's also evidence that Kyle and Surface, that the Chrome OS camera app is going to get portrait mode and some other layout changes.
Yes, because the Pixel Slate has a good camera surrounding the... general experience. It's a good camera, pixel level quality that Google, during our demos with the Mastia, was very excited to hype up.
Indeed. And then I guess the rest of the things for I/O expectations are just miscellaneous, and a lot of things we just don't know. I mean, one more thing that we do have pretty strong evidence for is this thing called Project Euphonia, which is apparently, I think we mentioned on last week's show, which is a new accessibility technology for helping the speech impaired. Mm-hmm. And this definitely sounds like something that will open up the keynote. Definitely. I would not be surprised at all if this is like the first or second thing that Sundar talks about, because they tend to open these shows with some kind of
feel good
humanitarian, we're making the world a better place kind of message.
So that way,
before they talk about all their dystopian technologies that are pulling apart the fabric of society.
Indeed.
And then other things, Google tends to use Google I/O as a stage to announce new things in YouTube. I remember in 2016 they announced they opened up the keynote by highlighting or whatever these paid
YouTube super chats
messages or whatever. Super chats, that's what they're called. So YouTube, Google Maps, we saw the AR stuff in Google Maps last year. Google Photos has traditionally been a big focus for IO.
Google Maps, so. I expect to see maybe some more information about when AR navigation is rolling out to actual people beyond local guides, the early testers.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's next week.
Yeah, definitely, because Google Maps is Google's next platform. It's an important development platform for them. I was actually at Cloud Next, which is in April. The Google Maps VP was on stage and at the very towards the end, and I found that very surprising to make a Google Maps appearance in that context. But they went on to talk about marketing on Maps, so I very much think that we'll probably be see some more developments this year as well. As Maps, as Google wants people to get and use and stay in Maps.
Yes, indeed.
And Photos, as you were saying.
Oh, yeah. And last year we had a little bit of a heads up of what was going to happen with Photos, which ended up being opening up a third-party API or opening up an API to developers for Photos.
Yeah,
which was a pretty big deal. There.
Yeah, somewhere there.
But yeah, we don't know what's going down this year with Photos. We haven't really seen any major additions or developments happening in the app, I don't think. Maybe you can speak to that.
We haven't. It's kind of interesting how Android is ending up getting the... this year, I could very much see an Android-dominant show. Android plus Assistant plus Google Home show.
Yeah, I just think that... on the Google Photos front, I think last year they leaked pretty much everything they announced at I.O. via just stuff that they had in the app that we discovered in teardowns.
Yeah.
And so maybe they just decided, we're not going to do that this year. And they decided to keep everything more hidden.
Yeah.
So for all we know, there could be big Google Photos splash and features and stuff coming that they just didn't leak to us this year, which is unfortunate, but, smart on their part. and then Fuchsia, the final wild card is Fuchsia, which is something, we've been talking about for a few years now, it feels like, at least a couple years. And it looks like, all the evidence really suggests that, the reports have said that Google really is ramping up Fuchsia to be a replacement for Android. That's what our good friend Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg reported.
Yes.
I think that's probably true. Although I will say I've heard from people who are aware of what's happening with Fuchsia and Android is that nothing is set in stone. There is no
it's not the future.
Roadmap. Yeah. There's no roadmap that says this is how Android is going to become Fuchsia. That doesn't exist internally.
There's no company-wide plan yet. Maybe this is what the Fuchsia developers are.
And I've even heard that there's no consensus among even higher-ups of what is the best way forward. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with Fuchsia. I feel like Google has to be careful because it has been hyped up. It is a new operating system, which is not a super common occurrence in the tech world in general. Well, at least not ones that are notable by big name companies. So they need to be careful about how and when they mention it, because I guarantee you if they even mention it to the slightest or have one session about it or whatever, it will be taken way out of context and blown up into... Yeah. Something that's not.
So. Is Google ready for the next wave of... Well, more broadly, is the tech industry ready to start the next-gen operating system discussion between Apple, Google, and Microsoft? I don't think we're there yet. So.
Yeah, I think we'll see a few more years at least of Android being the centerpiece.
And Android being fit into Chrome OS in increasingly... major ways. So
anyways, I think that pretty much rounds up the product announcements that we can expect. We do expect this year will probably be the return of, in some inside baseball things, we probably will see the return of hardware giveaways this year, you think?
Maybe.
You think every developer will walk away with a Pixel 3a? I don't think that is that crazy of a thought at all. I think every person that attends is going to get a 3a. That's my guess. I'm putting it on the record on Alphabet Scoop. My guess is that every developer is getting a 3a, and you can blame me if you don't. Feel free.
They're already in Best Buy, which is one of the weeks, so it's...
Yeah, I think it's...
They're ready.
I think they're going to be readily available.
Yeah.
And also, $399 is affordable enough that it wouldn't be a crazy...
Yeah.
Crazy giveaway.
And, like, the story behind the giveaways is always, we're giving you a device to develop on. And, I don't know, depending on the international break for... attendance, I think it would help to get those devices out around the world for Google, maybe even in markets where Pixel devices aren't available yet. So that could be a thing.
And when was the last time that Google gave away a phone at Google I/O?
Galaxy Nexus, right?
I'm actually going to check. I'm going to check Wikipedia right now, actually.
I'm pretty sure it was the Galaxy Nexus.
Hilariously, the Wikipedia has every giveaway for every Google I/O. Because there aren't enough people in the world that carry about that. 2009 was the HTC Magic. 2010 was HTC Evo 4G. Let's see. Oh, 2012 was the Galaxy Nexus, the Nexus 7, the Nexus Q, and the Chromebox. That was a really great giveaway. 2013 was a Chromebook Pixel.
Yeah, that's the last
2012 was the last time Google gave away a phone at Google I/O.
I have to make a correction. It wasn't the HTC Magic 4G. It was the HTC Ion.
Don't correct me. You need to correct Wikipedia.
You need to submit this edit
right now.
I don't have that much time. But do you remember that? The HTC Ion? It was a special edition with a sick as heck back. I'm very jealous of
that phone. I remember it just briefly, but honestly, being completely honest, I was completely oblivious to everything in Android until 2012-ish. So, yeah, I had a few years there where I was just completely oblivious. I definitely don't have as much Android history as most people in the Android blogging and journalism space. So, confessions... so next week we will have a show on Wednesday, for sure on Wednesday. We've been saying Wednesday every week for a few weeks now because we've been hoping that there would be enough news to get back on our normal schedule. But we'll definitely have a show next Wednesday because there 100% will be enough news to talk about on Wednesday.
I'm going to say it's going to be on Thursday, actually.
Why?
Have you seen our Wednesday schedule?
Oh, yeah. Maybe it'll be on Thursday. Well, no, we have to do it. We've got to do it on Wednesday. Maybe we can do it on Tuesday, actually. Maybe we can do it like Tuesday afternoon or something.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe.
We will do it next week at some point. Our Wednesday is the most crazy of all our days so far, but that would be the ideal because that's what people are used to. But yeah, we'll be on the ground Sunday morning. Kyle, Abner, and I will all be at I/O. And keynotes Tuesday morning. So be sure to tune in, follow us on all our socials because we will be having a live blog and live stream and et cetera and all that good stuff.
Yes.
So looking forward to it.
Wild.
And also just one last plug because I need to plug this every chance that I get. Please go follow ABC Scoop on Twitter, which is the official Twitter account for the show. Just would like to have that avenue of communication for those that are avid listeners, if you could call people that. until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every Wednesday or Friday or whenever we tend to do the show. It's really been up in the air lately. On all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and pretty much everything else. And so until next week, it's been good. This has been a pretty good show. We'll see you next week. I'm Stephen Hall, and this is Abner Lee. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.